Okay, everybody, welcome. Carla is back and all is well. And I am really happy to see you here. I'm very grateful that you're here. I'm very grateful for your willingness to take part in this work, really, by spending time with us and talking to us, discussing these matters, considering the actual nature of reality together. I'm going to start with a couple of emails. Dear John, you say that experiences are not important because they will go away anyway. This makes sense. On the other hand, you say that everything is one and I am everything. Well, I haven't had this experience. What seems to be my true nature could be described as an unchanging presence, which is sensed as some kind of spacious awareness, sometimes something like in, sometimes around the physical body. It also seems that when consciousness rests in it, feelings and emotions from people around me are taken up, which is not a problem at all, since there is no identification with them. I guess the question is, I'm not sure how my saying that everything is one and I am everything is on the other hand saying that experiences are not important. But in any event, this whole business of everything is one and I am everything, that all is one, that there's no separation, and that we are one being. This whole business is can be quite confusing when it's received in a mind that believes itself to be trapped in some limitation, trapped in some idea of what it is. The fact that all is one, the fact that I am everything, the fact that there is no separation. The actual experience of that, you see, is the actual, natural, normal, ordinary experience of being. Just exactly the way you experience the world, just exactly the way you have experienced the world from the very beginning of your life, just exactly in that way, with all of its shifting states of mind, its clarity, its confusion, its aggression, its thoughts, its stupidity, its confusion, and all of that. Exactly the way that is experienced is experiencing all is one. It is experiencing I am everything. That is the way it feels to experience all is one. Just exactly the way you feel now. Just exactly the way you've always felt. It's not a special experience. Special experiences are limited. They come and they go. They are of no consequence. It is what Ramana refers to as the natural state. And the reason it's called the natural state is because it's natural, because it's ordinary. So always the questing after specific and special states of being, such as clarity or joyousness or unconditional love or all is one or no separation, always, always in all of these cases, and also in the cases of seeking to banish special states of being like confusion and stupidity and anger and and things of that nature. In all cases, this is a kind of mind reform. It's a way of reforming and reshaping and making better the mind, which is precisely all of those shifting states of being. And mind reform's okay. God knows we could do with some of it right now. Nothing wrong with mind reform. But it has nothing whatsoever to do with freedom. It has nothing whatsoever to do with reality. It has nothing whatsoever to do with, more importantly, the ridding oneself of the fearfulness and anxiety that seems to be the energizing force of human life. Mind reform that is enacted by using the energy of this fearfulness and anxiety, this desire to do the right thing, to be the right thing, to understand the right thing, to be in the right state of being, lest I be harmed, lest I be extinguished. The mind reform that's based on that energy is, like everything else that's based on that energy, misery and suffering, and the projection of misery and suffering on everything around us. So I don't have anything against seeking special states of being. I don't have anything against mind reform, making the mind sweeter or clearer or more understanding or more compassionate or more joyous or less aggressive or less confused. It's just beside the point, as are all experiences. The only thing that causes the problem, the sole cause of all the misery and suffering in human life, is the horror and the fearfulness and the anxiety that are so much a part of it, that are the motivating force for everything that we do to try to feel better, to try to get more pleasure and less pain. It's not the trying to feel better that causes the suffering. It's not the trying to get more pleasure and less pain that causes the suffering. It is the belief that by doing so, we will be safe. It is that doing so, driven by this conviction that I am at stake here, that I am at risk here, that I am facing extinction here, and that I have to do what I can to stave that off. When that fearfulness and anxiety is gone, when it itself is extinguished, then it becomes immediately apparent, as actually has always been the case, it becomes immediately apparent that we are in this together, that the entire cosmos is in this together, that we are one, and that we have always seen that to be the case. Another issue, this person goes on, is bothering me is the importance of a teacher. You say that nobody can give you anything, but at the same time, a teacher seems to be necessary to stay on the right way. Further, you say that it is not about any kind of transmission from the teacher to the student. But it seems that this is happening quite obviously with the people that are attending your satsang. Is it enough to have contact to a teacher through the internet, or is personal face-to-face engagement necessary? The only teaching that's necessary, the only insight that's required, is the teaching and the insight that the solution to every problem, the solution to the underlying misery and suffering of life, that is, the solution to the fearfulness and anxiety that underlie life, is to see directly what I am, actually. That's the only insight that's required. That's the only teaching that's required. If you hear that, whether you hear it in person or in a recording or on the internet or reading a book or in any other way, if you hear that, that you must see the actuality of what you are in order to be finished with suffering, that's the only teaching that's necessary. The rest of it you will discover for yourself. Once that effort to see reality is underway, nothing will stop it. And you will see for yourself. You will find your way for yourself. Now, a teacher can certainly be helpful. Can certainly perhaps, not certainly perhaps, can perhaps help with some guidance that will make the effort itself more effective and take less time, perhaps. I really don't know whether that is or is not true. If that is true, then it certainly matters not whether the teacher is directly person-to-person, face-to-face with you, or is speaking with you over the internet, or is speaking with you through a book or a recording or an email or by any other means. If it is true that a teacher can be helpful in this effort to see what is actually called for in the insight that I must, before anything else, see directly for myself the actuality of what I am, and the insight that that is the case, if the teacher can be helpful, then surely it doesn't matter in what form or in what medium or in what how direct or indirect the relationship might be. It is, after all, nothing apart from using the language of the mind to speak to the mind and offer guidance and help to the mind in its own efforts to free itself of that which it has never imprisoned it. I will say this, I think that quite likely it is of great importance that if you have a teacher, that it be a live teacher, that certainly it is better than nothing to read the actual transcriptions of the words of teachers such as Ramana or Nisargadatta even, very few others. But much better to have a live teacher who can interact with you directly and meet you face to face, whether that face to face is by writing or recording or speaking or internet or phone or any of the rest of it, to meet you face to face in the present. But I tell you the truth, the only thing that's necessary is that one insight, is to embark upon that one effort, the effort to see what it is that is being spoken of when you are called upon to see directly for yourself the actual reality of what you are. That effort will bear fruit sooner or later with skilled means or unskilled means. It will bear fruit. The effort itself opens the mind to the light of reality, and it's the light of reality that destroys that whole conviction that you're at stake and at risk and in trouble in this life. And then you see what this life is for, really. You see, the purpose of our lives has nothing to do with awakening or enlightenment or self-realization or redemption from sin or atonement or any of that. The purpose of our lives has nothing to do with any of that. The purpose of these lives is these lives. Really. And what a wonder it is, these lives. I had another very, very short email here, which I kind of got a kick out of, and the subject of this email is, what does it mean to strangle the ego? And the body of the email is simply, love you and your work. Negative thoughts pop up, and I know I am not the thoughts, but they keep arising. Can you provide some pointers? What does it mean to strangle the ego? Well, what it means to strangle the ego, or at least what it meant for me when I heard that or read that in a book of Ramana's talks, what it meant to me was that I was going to try to figure out what it meant to strangle the ego. And I was going to do my very best to accomplish that, since Ramana had indicated that it was effective. And I advise you to do the same. Find out just exactly what that means. Try to accomplish that and see what comes of that. And see if in the strangulation of the ego, there is any consequence whatsoever to the rising or popping up or falling or destruction of negative thoughts or positive thoughts for that matter. So there. I'm not going to talk for very long here this afternoon. I'd much rather hear from you. But I had a dear friend write to me this week sometime and said something to me. I don't remember exactly what the words were, but said something to me to the effect that there is a lot of effort that goes in the spiritual arena and spiritual circles and so forth to say what it is. That is to say, to describe what reality is. To say what it is. And that it seemed to this person that was pretty useless and not worth the candle. That the only thing that really can be talked about is the way, not to describe what it is, but what we can talk about, and or to describe what it is not even, but what we can talk about and what we can usefully spend our time reflecting upon with these minds is how is the way to be finished with everything that occludes or seems to occlude our open-eyed, unconditional seeing of what is. And that way is, I tell you from my heart, that way is nothing other than to do whatever you can, whenever you can do so, to get to see what you are. To see what you are. And I have spent a lot of time, and this friend point that out, I spend a lot of time complaining about the fact that I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to tell you the way to see what you are. I don't even really know how to express to you what it is that I'm trying to express to you. To, when I say find out what you are, that's not it. And I try not to say that too much anymore. When I say see what never changes, what never moves, what is never absent, well, that's okay, but that's not it either. That's, if you can see it, and if you didn't see it, then it must have changed, it must have moved. And when I say, see, try to find the one who is seeing what it is that is being seen, well, that's not it either. You know, I mean, anybody could make anything of that, I suppose. Is it my eyes? Is it my brain? Is it my optic nerve? Is it my, what is it? And just like the way of self-inquiry that Ramana spoke of when he spoke of strangling the ego, and the question as to what does that mean, strangling the ego, well, I say again that if you try to strangle the ego, you will find out exactly what that means and exactly why Ramana advised someone somewhere to do that. And I can tell you that if you will just try to strangle the ego, if you will try to find, I mean, what is ego? Ego is I. Why don't we stop talking about it as ego and talk about it directly as I? So if you will try to find and strangle I, then you will know actually what Ramana was suggesting to the one to whom he suggested that they get I by the throat and strangle it. You will, in the act of doing that, discover that I vanishes. And in the vanishing of I am revealed. Just for a moment. And if you will try to see yourself, if you will do everything that you can think of to do that might bring you directly to an immediate, unmediated, ununderstood perception of the reality of you, if you will try with all your heart to do that, you will see for yourself what I'm talking about. The effort itself, the work itself of bringing to bear your natural intelligence and your natural intuition and your natural discernment to this effort just to get, just to see what you are directly. Not to know what you are, not to find out what you are, but to see what you are directly, and in the seeing, know it to be you. The effort to accomplish that is all that's needed. The effort to accomplish that is the accomplishment of that. The effort to accomplish that opens the mind to the light of reality and destroys the lie that you are at stake in this life, and washes away fearfulness and anxiety. Not, you know, not that you don't get scared, not that you don't, not that the practical usefulness of fear disappears. Not even that the practical usefulness of anxiety disappears, but that this underlying, unrelenting sense of being on the line here, of being at stake here, of being at risk of extinction here, that goes. That's gone. And the effort to see what you are accomplishes that. There is no use or point in describing to you what you are. Someone who describes to you what you are, I mean, how can anyone presume to do that? You're here. You know what you are. It's not of any use to describe to you what the outcome or the results of this inquiry, of this work might be, because the fact is that the outcome and the results of this inquiry are here now. I can describe it to you by saying it is just as you are now, minus fearfulness and anxiety. Just that. But I can tell you that if you will do this, if you will try with all your heart to see what you are, to see yourself directly, all will be well. All will turn out right. Okay, so I do go on, huh? So now it's your turn. Now, if you have anything you want to talk to me about, let's talk about it. If you have any questions, or let's just see what happens. I'm happy to talk to you about anything. Anybody?
We have Patrick calling from Medicine Heights in Michigan.
Hi, Patrick.
I'll just tell you what I think I understand you're saying, and you can tell me if that sounds right, okay? The way I understand it is that as I start this journey, I know who I am or what I am, but I don't know that I know. I don't have a conscious understanding of it, but I still have this sense that I know, and I'm able to direct my attention over and over towards it. And that at some point, and I don't know if this happens slowly or in a sudden flash, there's a conscious understanding who I am, and then I know that I know who I am. And what I think you're saying is that once that happens, the only usefulness of that is to now give you a better target to continue your self-inquiry, and that continuing the self-inquiry, knowing who you are, eventually leads to the eradication of the belief that you are this life, and that will end all misery and suffering. Do I have that right?
Well, not exactly. Kind of close, but not exactly. The object of the inquiry is not to gain a conscious knowledge or a conscious understanding that you know what you are. The conscious understanding that you know what you are is unattainable by the mind. Anything at all about the reality of what you are is unattainable by the mind. It may be that there are insights that come and insights that go and so forth that have as their nature explanation or description of reality and so forth, but that's beside the point. These are states of mind. The state of mind of knowing what you are, the state of mind of not knowing what you are, there really is no qualitative difference between them. What is my experience is that once you embark upon the real effort to rid yourself of all ideas of what you are by finding directly for yourself the reality of what you are, that effort works to make more transparent the mind to reality. And since the only problem is the underlying conviction that what you are and what you are limited to is this life with all of its glory and suffering and clarity and confusion, since that conviction that you are this life alone and limited to that is the cause, really, of the fearfulness and anxiety, that the admission of the light of reality, just the light, you know, light is invisible. Light isn't something that can be seen directly. But the admission of the light of reality into this mind, into the sense of individual existence, washes it clean of the conviction that you're at stake here, washes it clean of the, therefore, of the underlying fearfulness and anxiety that is present here, and reveals what has always been openly seeable here, which is what it is to be alive in human life. When we embark upon that inquiry, when we embark upon that effort to rid ourselves of the lie receiving the light of truth, what happens is that we actually discover that there is nothing we would rather do than see what we are. There is nothing we would rather do than see clearly, without obscuration, reality, which is always here and available to us. So that the inquiry is actually the nature of life to begin with. It's just wrongly enacted in a mind that is beset with this idea that I'm at stake here and afflicted by the fearfulness and anxiety that accompany that idea. Now, I can't believe that I just talked that long about such a small question, but it seems that the simpler things are, the more it takes to be able to even get close to saying something about them. The actuality of what I'm talking about is so simple. It is nothing more than to, without any concern with what understandings you have of it, with whether they are right or wrong, with whether they are useful or unuseful, without any concern at all for any of those thoughts, even the thought that is the concern about those thoughts, to just stop when you think of it and see if it is not true that you are here. You are always here. You are never absent. And in doing that, bring yourself face to face with reality. Because it's the face-to-faceness with reality that is what we seek. Not the knowing of it, not the understanding of it, not the attaining of it, just the seeing of it. And the seeing of it does all the work. And the seeing of it turns out to be not in order that you can deepen or consolidate or do anything else to your realization, but merely because it is what we want to do more than anything else, the inquiry proceeds for the rest of life. Do you follow that?
Yeah, I definitely get that, and I definitely get that at this point I feel like there is no stopping the inquiry, that I'm just going to keep doing it regardless of what happens. But I also realize that sort of the question behind my question was, is there any milestones along the way to tell me that, you know, I'm making progress? That, you know, I was kind of thinking that maybe that would be like something to say, well, once I have that I know that I know who I am, then that means I'm getting somewhere. You know what I mean? Like looking for that reassurance.
Oh yeah, of course I know what you mean. It is that impulse, that hunger for confirmation or for some milestone or waypoint or so forth, that makes, you know, everybody, makes all the writings about spiritual development and spiritual attainment and spiritual paths and spiritual practices and so forth so appealing to us. And that's okay. The fact is that the milestone that you can look for, the change in your life that you can notice, is the diminishing of the fearfulness and anxiety. And the blossoming, very gradual. You know, I hate to use such a romantic metaphor, but it's like daybreak, only much slower than actual daybreak on the planet Earth. It's like the very gradual dawning of the light that is so gradual that it is unnoticed until it's noticed. But you look and see if it is not true that the longer you find yourself working in this path, in this way, in this practice, you look and see from time to time if it is not true that you are less fearful, less anxious, that life is sweeter than you thought it might be as time goes on. Okay?
Okay, thank you, John.
Okay, I hope that was helpful.
Travis is calling from San Francisco, California.
Hi, Travis.
I just wanted to actually talk about a milestone that the last speaker talked about, and also suggest something to look at maybe that might make that, well, one of the things I enjoy about you, John, more than most spiritual teachers, if I can call you that, that I've come across, is your eagerness and willingness to share experiences and ask for I don't know if I want to say contributions to refining how it's shared or doing this work together, but the sense of really doing this together really shines through in how you speak and what you say, and I really, really appreciate that, and I just want to applaud you for that and say it's one makes you one of my favorite teachers in this realm.
Well, I thank you, I guess. I'm happy to be of use, and it really is true. I really don't think of myself as a spiritual teacher. I actually have little interest in specifically spiritual matters. I guess I have no interest in specifically spiritual matters. What I have found, and I have some knowledge and understanding of these specific spiritual matters, and I certainly have some experience in the practice of seeking after spiritual attainment of whatever nature, the attainment of understanding, the attainment of clarity, the attainment of enlightenment, the attainment of all kinds of things. But what I discovered was that what I speak of is actually has nothing whatsoever to do with any of that stuff. All of the in my experience and from my point of view, all of the spiritual utterance, whether it is in our present time or in past time, all of the spiritual utterance is just talking about reality. It's talking about this. But and it is very beautiful, and it can be useful, and it can be helpful, and it can be, I suppose, a lot of things. It's just that for me, all of those matters have to do with mind reform, have to do with doing something to make the mind, by which I mean the life, by which I mean the entirety of the life, become something in keeping with some spiritual understanding, to become clear or to become enlightened or to become awakened or to become loving or to become empty or whatever, for the life to become something that is spiritual in nature, a state of mind. And to me, that's all fine. I really, really don't have any objection or any problem, or I don't see that it causes any misery or suffering of any kind whatsoever. Because for me, what I see causes misery and suffering, all of it, every bit of it, every speck of it, is this underlying conviction that I am at stake in this life, and that if I am a spiritual person, if I am involved in spiritual activity, then I have got to do that right, and I have got to find the right teacher, and I have got to find the right teaching that's just perfect for me. And I have to, you know what I mean. I have to become enlightened. I have to become realized. And all that's okay. It's just beside the point to what I talk about, so I don't think of myself as a spiritual teacher. What I think is that spiritual or not, the seeking after the actual truth of what you are is the only thing that can rid you of fearfulness, anxiety, and misery and suffering. Whether we come to that from this road over here, from maybe a religious understanding, or we come to that from maybe a Buddhist understanding, or maybe a Advaita understanding, or maybe we come to that from trying to get rich in the world, or trying to get the right relationship, or through psychotherapy. By whatever means we come to that essential insight, that essential calling, to find out, to see directly, to apperceive, to see the reality of what I am, here, the things that brought us here are the things that we have found to be beautiful and rewarding and fulfilling and satisfying and so forth in the past, are beside the point to this actual effort. So, that being the case, I don't have any particular point of view about the nature of reality to give to you or to anybody else. And in fact, the only thing that I have to offer is my energetic and enthusiastic desire to see us all begin to engage in this work, no matter what else we're doing in our lives. And since what the success of that desire depends upon is the facility in communicating this insight to those with whom I speak, it is only you with whom I speak who can help me do that. And the idea that I have something to bestow upon you is anathema to me. I want us all, and as I think you see, and as I think that you're talking about, I want us all to join together in this adventure. I would like every human being on the planet to hear this, to actually receive the insight of this, not to hear it, not to become it, not to just to receive this insight that it's possible, that it's actually possible to devote some time to seeing what's real. And that insight, that it's actually possible to devote some time to seeing what's real, will do it all, will take us all home. So, do you follow that? Does that make sense?
Yeah, John, I completely follow that, and you took some of the words right out of my mouth that I was going to use, which is really awesome. The thing that I find was very helpful, I go through life trying to make a lot of sort of rational distinctions in my head, and one of the things that you said once that I found really useful was it's to look at yourself and not for yourself. And in my mind, one of the things I find useful is to see that there's two kinds of sort of essential thing going on in the world, that there's the side of the road that is all about form and structure and acquisition and refinement and refusals and affirmations and all those things of building that are useful to get through life, like knowing how to drive a car or how to deal better with a conversation or exit an argument correctly or shop well or all that stuff that has nothing to do with what self-inquiry is about. That if we are on the side of the street in our conversation where we're talking about a buildup of anything or a change of anything, then we're not talking about what self-inquiry is about, which is looking at what is as it is and not looking at yourself and not trying to find yourself somewhere else. Anything that's about action is on this part of the road that's about acquisition. You talk about this all the time, right? It's about acquisition. It's about denial. It's about getting rid of or acquiring or all that stuff. So what's been useful for me in this self-inquiry that I embarked on sort of hardcore about a year ago when I came across one of your YouTube videos is just to know that what I'm trying to look at when I'm looking at these and taking this time whenever it occurs to me, as you say, that I'm not looking for something that's about form and structure, that I'm looking at what I am as I am, without changes, without motion, without going after something or looking if I'm looking in the right place or the wrong place or any of those kind of notions of form. And I've just found that distinction in my own mind to be very useful, and to note that as you say, as I go through this process and this frequent looking at myself, that it takes on, I don't want to say a life of its own, but it does take on a life of its own, and it does eventually do itself more and more strongly. And in fact, I come to realize it's always been doing itself, and that whenever I've taken the moment to actually look for myself have been times where I've just let myself be aware that that's already the case, if that's not too confusing. But the other
actually, that's perfect. I just wanted to interrupt you just to say right there what you said there is perfect.
Thank you, John. And I just wanted to say about milestones, so the difference that this has had to me is before taking these times, if I read something that somebody else had acquired through enlightenment practices or realizations or whatever, there was a lot of jealousy that came up, a lot of eagerness, a lot of greed for those sort of things. And now I look at those things that happen, and sometimes I say, oh, yeah, I know what he's talking about, or, ooh, that sounds cool. And it's a sharing rather than something I want for Christmas, you know. And one of the milestones that made me really laugh happened to me about a month ago. I was in the shower, which is where a lot of my realizations come. And I was just looking at my hand, and I thought, okay, that hand is me. And I was sort of doing that, I realized, as a sort of testing to see if I could buy that, if I could believe that. And I couldn't. And I don't mean this in kind of a nihilistic sort of like, I am nothing this kind of way. It's just like, you know, this hand is just here now, and it doesn't define who I am in truth. It's what this body in motion and what's happening in the life is taking place, but it's not me. And anyway, that I thought was a very pleasant sign.
That is a very pleasant sign. That's exactly right. It's not that, and there's nothing wrong with the hand. I mean, you know, the hand's a hand, and hands are actually quite fascinating and amazing, and at any level that you want to look at them, hands are actually quite beautiful and amazing. It's not the hand. The hand's not a problem. What would be the problem is if you believed yourself to be the hand, as you don't, and then you would have to worry about that hand much more than you do now. And also, you know, the whole, I like the it is as if there are two realms. It is as if there are two realms, the realm of, as you call it, of acquisition and resistance. But actually the other realm is, much less than a realm, or much more than a realm. We enter the realm, the human realm, the realm of limitation and acquisition and resistance and so forth. We enter that realm, and find it to be actually quite gorgeous, quite wondrous and beautiful. That realm is where all of the spiritual attainment takes place. That realm is where all of the spiritual understandings come home. That realm is where all of the discord and the raucous music happen. And if that realm is just a realm, then it is quite sweet. So that I said all that to say that the effort to attain spiritual states of mind also fall into that realm, the same realm, with learning how to drive and learning how to pay the bills and learning how to cook dinner and learning how to not run in the street and so forth. The whole array of spiritual attainment is also a part of that realm, which doesn't make it bad. It just makes it, it can have no effect on disposing of the misery and suffering that comes from the belief that I am this realm, this human realm, this human life alone. So, yeah, that's... Thank you, Travis. I'm very happy to hear all of that. And it's also my experience that you confirm that it does, it's always been the case that we have been looking at ourselves. It's always been the case that we have been interested, really interested in absolutely nothing else except our nature. And it is true that when the inquiry is enacted, whenever, in the shower or whenever it is enacted, it is true that that's what's discovered, that this has always been the case. So thank you, Travis. Anything more?
Not today, John. Thank you very much.
Okay, anybody else?
Tobias, calling from France.
Tobias, what a nice surprise. Hello, good to see you.
Hello, John. Can you hear me?
I can hear you very well, yes.
John, I have one question. Many people I talked with say one cannot see what one is, but my experience is that I can see that what Ramana tells about to be the self. It is nothing one could describe as a form. One could maybe say, and that is my question, if this is true, that it is no content. It is like clear, yes, like glass. One cannot see it is of substance, but I, my experience is that one can see this or that, what one is directly, because this is aware of itself. And the strange thing is, in this inquiry, I just talk a little bit, is that this becomes more and more clear, but not in a way that it is new or that there is something what one could or I could talk about awakening, but one effect is that future and past somehow disappear. You see, it for me the experience is, okay, I'm also Tobias and with the history, but past becomes the same way unreal than future is unreal. It is a fixation somehow on this pure presence. And in the experience of this presence, there is no change in the person, I can say, but the whole of life becomes more and more smooth. And my question, the only question, is very short. Is it also your experience that one can really experience what one is, and it is in the end the only experience one has?
Yes, that is exactly true. It has never been the case that anyone has had the experience of anything apart from the reality of what they are. That is actually the case. And all that you said, I would probably say similarly, although I would speak of in particular the sense that there is no content, that it is empty of content, that you are actually empty of content. But also I find the metaphor of light to be useful, because light itself is invisible. It can't be seen, and yet it illuminates all. But the thing with these things, Tobias, that in the end, what you said in the end kind of is much more to the point. What you said in the end about the fact that we always have the experience of reality, we have never not had the experience of reality, and that there is no experience to be had apart from reality, is closer to the mark, because it is more inclusive. And whenever we start to describe reality, no matter how open our description of reality might be, we are engaging in the practice of describing states of being. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just not very helpful to the inquiry, I don't think it's very helpful practically to the inquiry. The inquiry, in my experience, is best served by a kind of benign neglect. I really do not seek to give anyone any sense of what they are looking for might feel like. And I think that benign neglect is better than taking a chance on giving anybody the a sense of what it might feel like, what they might feel like, which is what they are looking for. So, for that reason, I just beg people to do it and to find out for themselves. You know, there have been descriptions of reality for 5,000 years now. And so far as I can tell, these descriptions of reality have had little good effect. I mean, for 5,000 years they've been going on, and for 5,000 years we've been doing the same things we are doing today. So I beg people to find out for themselves what it is that all of these spiritual utterances are about, to see for themselves whether there is any truth or to them at all. And the insight that there is no experience other than reality is very valuable. And the confirmation that as time goes on, nothing changes about the life except the things that change anyway, but that everything is smooth. That report, that confirmation is also very valuable to people because it gives people a sense of what to look for. And they're not looking for awareness or reality or any of that. What they're looking for is that no matter the lack of any overt change in the nature of the life, no matter all of that, that life reveals itself to be actually very smooth and sweet, just the same. You follow me?
Yes, I think it is just the experience, you know, that equal what happens, one doesn't become more or one doesn't become less in this direct experience of oneself. And for myself, I feel somehow if one would, you don't like it so much, John, would explain it, it is just by looking to reality one gets convinced or one realizes that all happening in the life doesn't give oneself something and also doesn't take oneself something, because reality, this background, one could maybe say, is always of the same size, maybe one could say, or is really not changed or harmed or disturbed by the things happening in life.
Yes, or helped by the things happening in life. Yes, exactly. And but it's that, the because is beside the point. The seeing, the direct seeing, the revealing of what's always been seen, which is that I am, whatever I am unhurt, unhelped, unenhanced, undiminished, unanythinged by anything that happens in life, is a consummation devoutly to be desired. Okay?
Yes, it's somehow as if oneself is, you know, all what is happening is time and space, and sometimes, I don't know if this even has to do with these matters, but it is maybe beside the point. This, the reality itself, is beyond all these dimensions, like just time, you know. It's including this, but it's not touched by it, I would say, but it is too much said, maybe.
Yes, you see, and it's what you're saying is is certainly true, a lot truer than other things. But you see, that's exactly this desire arises in us once we are rid of the worst of the insanity. The desire arises in us to say what we are, and everything you say.
Okay, John, I shut up now. Okay, it's not off. I understand what you mean. Okay, it's really everyone has to figure it out for oneself. Yes.
Right, but what I'm saying is that you are the proof of what I've been saying, which is that we have to find out for ourselves what is really, actually, here. We have to see for ourselves directly what it is that all of the spiritual utterance has been talking about, and see whether any of that spiritual utterance has any validity or usefulness or relevance whatsoever. And the fact that you... the way that you speak of this mirrors and enhances and builds upon and the same insights that are found in all spiritual utterance is the proof of what I'm saying. You have to see this for yourself, but when you do see it for yourself, you discover that everything they've all been saying, now you see what it is they were trying to get at, and now you see, too, how little use all that was before you saw what it was they're trying to get at. Do you follow that? That's a little...
Oh, yes, I can follow, John, because it is just what is experienced all the time, you know. Out of all these things one reads in this spiritual context, one gets pictures or expectations that would be something else. One is experienced just right now, but what they are speaking about is just the normal experience of being, you know. So this was all, John, and I thank you very much.
You're very welcome. I'm very glad to speak with you, Tobias. Is there anybody else?
Oh, hi. John, thanks very much for giving me the time. I just wanted to explore a little bit the something that's been rolling around with me. It's about free will and who makes the decisions. My insight at present is something along these lines. Finally, when all is said and done, when an action is taken, it seems that there's out of the millions of or hundreds of thousands of thoughts which make up this knot of myself, something arises, and the decision is actually not done by some super being or ego. It's just a conglomeration of thoughts, and it sort of struck me as to why perhaps there's an inevitability or a lack of free will. And it seems to me that even the inquiry that you are talking about, and in my own experience, is also one or two of these thoughts, or 10 or 12 of them, that have... decided, okay, we'll do the inquiry. I don't know if any of this makes sense to you, or if perhaps this model of mine is just way off the beam.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, we can. It's my experience is similar to yours. I can find no controller of action or thought here. I can find no one here who thinks thoughts or enacts action. But that seems to me also to be somewhat beside the point. I mean, if it is true that the things that occur within you and the actions that are taken within the framework of the life structure that you're talking about, and the thoughts and so forth, all of which come and go within this life structure, if it's true that there is no one, least of all you, whoever that might be, to take credit or responsibility for these things, if no one can be found who is doing any of this, apart from just the conditioned arising that is the doing of the entire manifestation. If that's true, then so what? I mean, if it's true, then it's of no consequence whatsoever to the inquiry. If it's true, then the inquiry will appear in that mind as it has and conduct itself as it will and result in the eradication of the underlying thought process that says that I am this life or limited to this life. And when that goes, the fearfulness and anxiety themselves, subject to the rise and fall of conditioned existence, they will go too. And it will be of no consequence whatsoever whether there was anybody actually doing the inquiry or not. And if it's not true, and in fact it's just a quirk of the human psychological capacity that we cannot have we cannot find an entity here thinking thought or enacting action and so forth, if that it turns out that that's just no more than that we cannot find such an entity, then again, so what? If there is an entity here who desires to be free and who is sick and tired of misery and suffering and happens upon the insight that the inquiry, the deliberate, effortful movement of attention looking for the direct contact with reality will rid them of the cause of misery and suffering in human life, then in that case, too, the inquiry will proceed and the result will be the same. So the point of this is that the philosophical and metaphysical issues about free will or determinism, you can even throw God into the mix, that the metaphysical and philosophical considerations and discussions, as interesting and satisfying as they might be, have no bearing on the inquiry itself. I mean, inquiry will either take place or it won't. And if the inquiry has appeared in this mind, then the inquiry will, so far as I can see, inevitably proceed to its conclusion. Do you follow that?
Yes, yes, I do. Thank you very much. In one way, the insight, and assuming that it is true, the insight I have found to be helpful as things come and go, new work and so on. It almost seems as if I can watch this in a more detached manner because the realization is there that this eye watching it is somehow part of it, and yet there's another. The watcher is not part of it, so. I think that the thank you very much. I think the insight, whether or not it's true, leading to this reality is very valuable, and I thank you for that very much indeed.
Well, you're very welcome. I'm happy to be of help. Anybody else?
Rupam calling from Australia.
Hello, John.
Hi, Rupam. My goodness, we can hear you clearly. How are you? Did I speak too soon?
Well. No, it's fine. I heard you. I hope you can hear me now. There's probably a bit of delay. I wanted to report that not only is your speaking precious, but everyone who speaks describes the experience. No, that's not quite right. When I turn to asking the question, here, so clear, so vivid, so the only real thing. But I only know that in a way afterwards. I seem to recognize the clarity, though right now when I'm speaking, I'm recognizing it. I wanted to report an effect that as a mother, it's always been apt to look after a little bub, and instead of it being torture, it was just quite gentle, allowing the baby to have its crying and whatever, and doing what I had to help her. And this was such a conflict.
Well, Rupam, I am not certain that I heard everything you said because you would break up, but I am certain that I got the gist of it. And something you said that was very interesting, and that is that when you spoke about the certainty, the actual knowing that you are seeing reality, but that comes after the seeing. It doesn't come during the seeing, and that is very useful, actually. It is the case, of course not. If you are absolutely with eyes wide open doing nothing but seeing reality, there is nothing whatsoever that can be said about it. It's only in the moment after that the insight and the certainty arrives, because that insight and that certainty is a state of mind. And of course, the seeing of reality is not a state of mind. States of mind are what come and go within this reality. So, but it is true that it is, and it is very indicative that you see this, that the knowing that you have seen follows the seeing, right?
Absolutely.
And I heard you saying something about... I interrupted you, and so I'm going to interrupt you one more time, finish what I said, and then you can speak, okay? We have this delay from hell between us and Perth, but that's okay. The thing you said about what I understood you to be saying about the crying baby and, the crying, fitful, maybe bad-tempered baby, and the patience and the willingness to just let it be a crying and fitful and petulant baby, I took to be a metaphor for the proper relationship with the craziness of these human mind streams. And I think that that's perfectly true. That's a very proper relationship with the mind stream, is to let it be what it is, because there's nothing you can do to change it, that's for sure. And the mind that has undertaken this inquiry will have its fill in the end and will quiet down and sleep peacefully in the end. Right?
Oh, thank you. It was a real experience, but I love it. I love what you said. It's so much that this mind is a crying and fitful baby, and it is quieting down, and Oh, there's so much gratitude.
Likewise. Anything else?
No. Other than to continue to thank everyone here. It helps us all.
Okay. Anybody else?
We have Jan calling from the Netherlands.
Jan, hello.
Hello, John. John, can you help me with the suffering? Let me explain this. The other day I was talking to somebody and she asked me, what are you in today? And I started to talk about Ramana and about John Sherman and Carla and she asked me, what is it all about then? And then I tried to explain the core of this all. And I started saying, well, you know, everybody is suffering. And the one thing you can do about it is to get to know the truth. And then she said, hang on, I'm not suffering, I'm having a nice life. And then I didn't know what to say. So what is this suffering anyway? Why are we suffering, and in what way are we suffering? Can you explain that to me, please?
You know, first of all, before I go into what suffering is, I would never, ever try to persuade people that they were wrong when they say they're not suffering. It's not my place or anybody else's place to make a judgment that the report of not suffering is false or premised on some illusion or so forth. You know, it's my experience that actually the truth is that nobody is suffering. So if somebody tells me they're not suffering, I say hallelujah. And if later it turns out that they find that they are suffering, then I know how they can rid themselves of that. As to what suffering is, you know, we have taken this verb suffering in English. I don't know what the verb is in Dutch or any other language, really. But we have taken this verb suffering in English from the teachings of the Buddha, who the first noble truth of which is that life is suffering. And the word, however, in English, suffering, carries much bigger weight than the word the Buddha used in Pali or whatever language he spoke, which was dukkha, which is actually a Pali word whose root has to do with the axle on the wheel of a cart being off center, so that the cart is always kind of an uneven ride, always kind of jolting and not even and irritating, and not in a big way, but just a constant irritation. So, first of all, suffering is not like the melodramatic, or it can be. It can become quite melodramatic and quite romantic and quite invested with a lot of energy and a lot of belief in its significance. But those are just the flare-ups of suffering. The suffering that I speak of when I speak of suffering is precisely that undercurrent of anxiety, of things are not quite right. I mean, after all, I mean, for God's sake, I'm a human. And I have this capacity to reflect upon the nature of reality. And I'm going to die. And there's absolutely nothing I can do about that. And that there's an underlying current of anxiety that we mostly are able to ignore, to distract ourselves from, or to deny, or to resist, that sometimes flares up in experiences of existential fearfulness that cry out to be noticed and cry out to have something done for them, about them. But the the suffering itself is this underlying low-level anxiety, this underlying low-level sense that something isn't quite right here, that life isn't quite living up to its promise, that we spend a lot of energy and a lot of intelligence denying and turning away from that underlying current of anxiety. And that underlying current of anxiety is rests on and is fueled by unseen and unseeable conviction that I am limited to this life. With all of its vastness, I am limited to this life, and that I face extinction at the end of this life, and that maybe there's something I can do. I mean, who can tell? Maybe there's something I can do. I can think the right thoughts, or I can get the right relationships, or I can desire the right things, or I can worship the right God, or I can find the right enlightenment, or there's something that I can do to change this life and rid it of its underlying unsatisfactoriness, which itself is predicated on the certainty that if I am this life alone, I face extinction. That's suffering. Now, the elimination of suffering comes about when that underlying, unseen, and really unseeable conviction that I am at risk here, that everything depends upon me being the right thing, doing the right thing, thinking the right thing, that no matter what I do, I won't get out of here alive anyway. That certainty is wiped out as if it never existed in the light of the effort to get the direct, immediate, face-to-face seeing of the reality of what I am. And in the absence of that conviction, when that conviction goes, turns out that the life that I lose all separation from the life. I lose all sense of distance and standing at arm's length from the life. I lose all sense of protecting myself from the life. And the life reveals itself to be what I have always wanted. Actually, what I have always wanted. The life turns out to be actually the actuality of the realization that everyone speaks of. The life, just as it is. Now, again, somebody tells me they're not suffering, I say hallelujah. Somebody tells me they are suffering, I urge them to find out who it might be that's suffering these consequences, that's suffering these diminishments and enhancements, who that might be. And I urge them also to look and see, look at the reality of what they are. So, I'm not sure that I answered your question, but is that helpful?
You sure did, John. Thank you very much. It's very clear and helpful. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Anybody else? One more? Okay, then. There be... Oh, one more.
Chick, calling from Scotland.
Hi, Chick. I guess you are having difficulty, Chick. Ah, well. These things happen. If you figure it out, let me know. Okay, then. Chick, I hope, you know, we can, you can write to me, or there are other things that will happen in the future. I'm looking for more ways to be available to meet with all of you like this, and others, and so write to me. Write to me. There is a discussion board on the website called Conversations, which I am starting after a long neglect to pay attention to. So if you post something there, I will look for it. Actually, that's a good thing, because then everybody gets the benefit of our exchange. That's the reason why I want to start shifting to the public board. You don't have to, you know, you can be whatever name you want to be. It's not public in the sense of that. So I am, as always, I am so happy to be here. I'm so happy to see the response and the reports of good outcomes to the inquiry. I recently received a report from a very dear friend who I have been with for 5 years or more now, and who, after a very, very rocky and lengthy road of inquiry, really. Has discovered that they are happy and at home in their lives. It's wonderful to hear these reports. It's wonderful to hear the responses. It's wonderful to see the confirmation of the effectiveness, the pragmatic, practical effectiveness of this work, of this inquiry. It's also wonderful, even more wonderful, to hear the problems and the difficulties and the confusions and the wrong steps and so forth in the course of this inquiry. The reason it's more wonderful, if it can be more wonderful, is because those who are reporting the good effects of the inquiry . Well, those who have difficulty with the inquiry finally reveal that their difficulties are everybody's difficulties, and that in the end those difficulties themselves belong to the realm that is entirely beside the point. And to have the discussions of difficulties in the open and in a public forum is useful to all. Useful to everybody who is in this inquiry, in this wonderful adventure. So anyway, all that notwithstanding, write to me, stay in touch with me, come and meet with me here, come and meet with me in Ojai or Santa Monica or Carefree or wherever it is that we end up being in person. Let me know how you are. Let me know how you're doing. Let me know if I can be of any help. And in all things, be well. Take care of yourselves. Thank you so much for this time together. I'll see you soon, somewhere, somehow. Sometime. Enjoy yourselves. Goodbye.